I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you are a seller of private label products on Amazon. Either you're based in the UK and selling in the USA, or you're based in the UK and selling in the UK. If you're an American and you're selling in the UK, USA, you'll also have things, I think, to learn from me. We did have about half the listeners of the podcast from America, actually, but it's shifting more towards the UK. I'm not sure the exactly latest stats, I haven't checked, but I think we were looking at, last time I checked, about two-thirds of the listeners were from the UK and about a third from the USA and the rest of the world combined. Quite a few in India. So if you're listening from India, then happy Diwali. If you are if that's the right religion, forgive me, I'm not great on world religions, but I think that's the right one. I'm not sure if it happens at this time of year, though, so forgive my ignorance. And just a couple of Australians. So you're in the middle of sunshiny summer in Australia. I know you've got a few problems with bushfires, etc., but I'm pretty jealous of your weather. So think of us stuck in rainy Europe, particularly in the United Kingdom, anyway, the weather is not great. Yeah, and just a smattering of listeners in places like Germany and whatever in Europe as well. So, willkommen, bienvenue, and, bienvenidos, and any other words I can think of. Hope you've had a good Christmas or a good time with your family if you're not a Christian, but you take a break at this time of year anyway. And I hope you're going to have a good new year. This is a quick in-between episode to talk about something that I've really been, it's been sort of bubbling up in me for quite a while that I felt I needed to talk about. The quality of sound, I'm afraid, is not going to be good because I'm recording this on my trusty iPhone 6S Plus. It's a beast of a phone. It's got a pretty decent microphone, but it's not really designed for recording voice memos. And anyway, I'm going in my knackered old car, which, if my Amazon business does well, is going to be replaced by a slightly better car, or I might even get rid of it and replace it with an altogether sexier thing altogether, like an electric bike. Anyway, I digress, but it's the time of year for slightly broader thinking. So this is, again, going to be slightly less focused than the usual ones, but I feel that this is an important big picture thinking that you need to do, and I think the ideal time of it is in a bit of a lull, and I think there is a bit of a lull naturally in an Amazon business, or most businesses, between Christmas and New Year in the UK anyway, and that probably applies to you as well. So it's a good time for reflecting on the past and looking forward to the future. I've got a couple of episodes that I want to cover on Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. And I'm glad to say that, unlike many of the big business thinkers of the last 20, 30 years, he's not an American, but he's a Brit. Nothing against American business thinkers. I read tons of their books and follow loads of their podcasts and YouTube and even Periscope now. For example, Ben Cummings, who I referenced in the last episode, is a fantastic Amazon seller and mentor. Works a lot with Jason Fladlin of Rapid Crush, and is, I believe, delivering the bonus material for the people who bought ASM 6 through them. They were affiliates for ASM, Amazing Selling Machine. So he's a person to watch as well. So he's running a little Periscope show. Periscope's a very recent thing where you sort of broadcast live. I'm not even sure what the hell is exactly involved. I just know that he's got a lot of recordings on his website. So effectively little 20-minute videos of him talking to his phone. That looks like something quite fun that appeals to me, actually. So that's something that, if we have a few more listeners to the podcast here, I might start venturing out into doing. At the moment, possibly the numbers are quite up to that. But I'd be happy to do it for relatively small numbers of people. Let me know if that would interest you by going to the blog and let me know there. So you can go to our Facebook group as ever, www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. And let me know there what your thoughts are as well. Or you can go to the blog, www.amazingfba.com. And you can either go to /ask, A-S-K, where you can ask a voicemail question. If you want me to answer your question on the podcast, I'd love to do that. We've had that a couple of times before, and I'd love to do a lot more of that. So please ask a question. But also, if you've got a specific thing that you would like me to do, and if you want me to do more Periscope stuff, then I'm very happy to do that as well. Okay, so today I'm going to talk a little bit about this principle which Richard Koch K-O-C-H, wrote about in The Star Principle, his book, and therefore the thing I'm going to talk about is The Star Principle. The Star Principle is the thing that Richard Koch credits with making him rich. The good thing about Richard Koch that makes him a bit different from most of the people who write business books is, number one, he's British, which, as I say, I'm not an anti-American bias. It's simply that it makes a change, especially for a British person. And secondly, that he became very rich. He's on the Forbes, you know, rich list for the UK. I'm not sure what number he's at, but he's got, I believe, worth over £150 million. So in dollar terms, that's what, $225 million, sorry. Not used to donating millions. But he made the vast, vast majority of that as an investor. Before that, admittedly, he was a professional management consultant, and he set up a consulting firm as well. But he has not become rich from selling books about how to tell people how to become rich. He's become rich by following his own principles in investing, which is kind of unusual and kind of refreshing. So for that reason alone, I really, really trust what he has to say, because he's followed his own talk. He walks his talk big time, and he's had phenomenal success with it over many years, not just a flash in the pan either. So he's a pretty impressive guy. He's not a big talker. He's not a big personality, quite calm, very British, if you like, which is kind of why I like him as well. I'll put some links to some YouTube videos in where Perry Marshall interviews him. Perry Marshall is a very interesting character as well, and he actually reconnected me with Richard Koch's book, because I had read Richard Koch's book. I'd bought it myself kind of on a whim. I mean, I suppose it sounded pretty cool, The Star Principle. I flipped through it, thought, wow, that sounds an amazing idea. Bought it, 5-6 years ago, and read it quite avidly, as I tend to with business books. I do actually read them. I devour them. But then I'd left it on the shelf, thought, oh, well, that's not really relevant to me. And at that time in my life, maybe it wasn't. I was kind of reconnected to it by getting interested in Perry Marshall, and that's because I was looking into Google AdWords and considering doing that, and my mentor had said, oh well, Perry Marshall's the standard go-to guy for that, has been since about 2003, which is pretty extraordinary when you think about how quickly the online market moves. I mean, he's held the position of the number one Google AdWords guy, you know, for training in Google AdWords for, you know, almost as long as the platform's existed, not quite. So I got connected to Perry Marshall, and that's something I'm going to be talking about in future, but when I've got a little bit of experience behind me of Google AdWords. I don't like to talk about things in the abstract too much without kind of testing them myself in my business, and then I can speak from a little bit of personal experience at least. You know, it doesn't make me an authority, but at least it means I'm not just, you know, spouting what other people say without trying it out. So that's kind of not exactly my promise to you as a podcast listener, but that's basically my aim, and mostly I think I do at least stick to that. So anyway, Perry Marshall is a Google AdWords guru, and I haven't really connected to his, I've connected to his material, read his books recently again, but I have not implemented the stuff yet. So watch this space. Google AdWords will be something I'll be looking into, as well as YouTube videos. Right, so that's a bit of a teaser for the future. Now, coming back to Perry Marshall's interviewee, Richard Koch, and the Star Principle. Richard Koch's Star Principle idea is from a consulting group that was very, very big in its day, a remarkably successful business in its day, but which then became very unfashionable. And that was the Boston Consulting Group, the BCG, which, as the name suggests, was based in Boston, the United States. They had a way of determining whether a business was going to become basically a very, very valuable business, whether it was something to invest in, called the Boston Consulting Matrix. And that simply divided the world into the 2x2 matrix, beloved of all management consultants ever. And that dealt with the two axes were growth and market share. And very simply, the premise was this: if you've got a business that is part of a low growth market, but which has got a dominant market position, that's what you call a cash cow. And that is something that produces cash. It's not necessarily going to produce a lot of growth of investment capital, but it's worth having for cash. Then you've got something that might be in a high growth market, but that has lost its dominant position. So trying to think of businesses that might be in that position. For example, in my case, I'm a music lover and a musician, so I listen to Spotify, which is not a publicly listed company, but it's growing like crazy, and the whole streaming music thing has become a massive way of consuming music. It used to be that iTunes and downloading and paying for music was big. Before that, it was CDs, and way back in the day, it was vinyl and tape and whatever. Now it's about streaming, so it's a hugely growing market, so it ticks that box, and Spotify is very, very dominant in that market. And that is really the star business. That part of it is when you have a high growth market, that is to say the growth of the market as a whole, that niche, that market segment, that market niche is growing at least 10% a year, preferably more, for a number of years, not just for one or two either. And your company that you're looking at is also the number one player by quite a large margin in that market. That is called a star business by Richard Koch. And he says that they are infinitely, or not infinitely, but massively more valuable than any other businesses. Now, the business that made him rich, seriously rich, as opposed to merely well off, I think, was a business called Betfair, where he invested £1.5 million, and to date, I think it has made him, he's turned that into £100 million, I believe, approximately. Anyway, so it's almost 100 times return on investment. Well, it's not, that's bad math, sorry. I don't know what that is. Say 80 times return on investment. What's 100 divided by 1.5? I guess that's 200 over 3. So that'll be about 66 times return on investment. Okay, that's pretty spectacular anyway. Certainly, he started off from being moderately well off when he built and sold a management consulting business and sold it for about £6 million, which I'd be very, very happy to retire on that. I'd be happy to retire on a quarter of that, really. But anyway, you know, for him, he was left with £3 million after paying some taxes and buying a house. And so he invested that. That was his kind of seed capital for investing. And lo and behold, he's suddenly worth £150 million. Well, not suddenly, but, you know, a couple of decades later. So anyway, this stuff is therefore very, very powerful, really works. I mean, he's taken his own money, putting his money where his mouth is, quite literally. And not only once, but he's done that. I think he's made 16 such kind of angel investing type investments or venture capital type investments. And out of those, 8 have done really well, and then 8 haven't done that well. Now, when you compare that with your average venture capitalist, if there is such a thing, they would hope for 1 in 10 of their investments to really take off. And they'd expect maybe one of them to die and take their money with it. In other words, go bankrupt, and maybe another couple of they're unlucky. And then most of the rest to not really do much, not really grow much, not really shrink much either. So to have a sort of 50% batting average where half of them really take off is amazing, amazing rate. So Richard Koch is really onto something quite exceptional, quite extraordinary here. And the reason that a lot of people ignore it is because it was part of an overall sort of centralized command and control way of approaching business and corporate structure, which went out, went out of favor in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and probably quite rightly for a number of reasons. I'm not an expert in that, and I don't need to be, but the point is, for whatever reason, something very, very powerful goes out of fashion, that's an enormously powerful thing to do, because things hide in plain sight. And most investment managers, as I understand it, most fund managers don't really operate according to this principle for whatever reason. Now, that's all a bit abstract. You may think, what's that got to do with me as an Amazon business owner? Well, I think it's got everything to do with it. Because here's the thing, we don't have to make investment decisions about investing in an entire business when we are just running one business, that is to say our Amazon business, or rather we're not just running it, we are creating it. We are creating an asset which could be potentially sold. But the choice we do have is between different product lines. To start off with, of course, we have a sort of theoretical choice between what looks to be a winner and when we're doing the research phase. And then, of course, later down the line, which is where I'm at now, and you may not be at that point yet, and you may be, is when you've got several products and then you've actually got real live data from your own sales. Either which way, the same principle applies. Really, if you want to make a real smash hit success, you need to look at this is a subtle thing. So this is different from what most people are teaching, and this is what I want to apply. Is your market for your product niche growing, and is it growing fast? Now, that is not something that's easier to figure out, because Google Trends will give you a certain amount of information on keywords. So that is not something that you can necessarily neatly find out with a one-tool, one-hit wonder, because I'm going to get questions about how to do that, and quite rightly. My answer would be you need to kind of keep your ears open and your ears to the ground. In other words, your eyes open and ears to the ground, if you want to mix metaphors up. In other words, you need to be using any tools that come to hand. But you need to be watching your Amazon Marketplace, reading these papers, stay in touch with your industry. And if you stay within an industry you know and understand, you'll have an automatic feel for that. For example, if you are an amateur cook and you spend a lot of time with other people who love cooking, you know, and you do go to dinner parties and you discuss, you hang around in their kitchen, poke around a bit, get a bit nosy. I'm imagining this because I don't do a lot of cooking and go to a lot of dinner parties, but I do a little bit. So it's something I can relate to vaguely, right? I wouldn't go into this as an Amazon thing because I'm not passionate enough and not knowledgeable enough. But, you know, imagine, for example, you are using certain types of saucepan and they have a certain type of coating. I'm fishing a bit here because I'm trying to avoid going into my own product area because I don't want to help my rivals here. Let me think about something I do a lot. Bike riding. Let's choose that. Let's stay out of the kitchen because I don't really know enough about that. So I like riding a bike. Now, I imagine that all my friends ended up with composite frame bikes made of carbon fiber rather than steel, right? That would be a trend I would gradually begin to notice, right? Another thing that I'm passionate about, my Mac and my Apple products. So I've got an iPhone 6S Plus, which is the largest, latest iPhone. Before that, I had an iPhone 5. My mates have got iPhone 4s. I had an iPhone 3G. So I kind of know the models. I know the trends. Now, if I'm sitting in a tube in London, over a course of days, weeks, months, patterns emerge. Like, for example, I start noticing that lots of people have got an iPhone 6 or an iPhone 6S Plus, and I'm very aware of that because I've got the same model. So as soon as you buy something, you're very aware of everyone else who's got the same model, don't you? You buy a Ford car, next week everybody else seems to be driving a Ford car. You buy a Saab, everybody else seems to be driving a Saab the next week. You know, it's one of those things. I miss my Saab. I'm driving a Ford right now. I shouldn't probably tell you that, but don't tell anybody that I'm doing that, hence the sound quality. But I miss my Saab. Anyway, so you even spot, for example, that the brands that people start to become fond of, the trends, whatever. So this isn't like scientific, but I would encourage you to keep your eyes and ears open. Use a bit of common sense and get off Amazon. Get out into the real world. Get into your favorite stores. Get into the sort of product you're into. Now, I'm not saying, for example, that I would go into the iPhone accessories market because I think that's hyper competitive. But it's an example of something that I'm kind of attuned to naturally because I'm involved with the product. I'm passionate about it. And I live in an environment where I see people use them. So in my case, that's the tube in London for whatever reason. I then tend to be phoning people because you can't phone anyone on the tube yet, but actually that's beginning to change. Well, I digress. So the point is, you can see trends going on around you all the time if you stay in touch with them. You can also do a bit of Google searching. You can read your industry papers. The advantage of doing all this stuff off Amazon is that other Amazon buyers and other Amazon sellers, I should say, but buyers of product from retailers, from wholesalers or from, you know, suppliers in China in order to sell, those people, your competition, in other words, they're not all doing exactly the same damn thing. So that's one thing the further I get onto Amazon, I think finding ways to choose products that isn't the same way as everybody else is going to become more and more and more important in order to just make sure you're not choosing the same products as everyone else and ending up competing with everyone else at the same product. Right? That's a slight side note, but I think the main note is look for a trend that you notice is growing. And if you don't notice, key into a marketplace. Don't just get obsessed with numbers on Amazon. Get into the real world. Notice what's going on. Okay? Then the other thing is to notice who the leaders are in that niche, right? Now, the other thing to know is that it's much better, if you want to be a star business, to be the number one player in a growing niche, however small the niche is, right, than it is to be any form of player in a larger niche. Now, I've had a very, very interesting example. When I read this book again, I look back on my products, my product lines, if you like, different products that I've got selling in Amazon. And I thought, you know what, this really does apply to me because I've had a product in a large marketplace where the demand is higher than other marketplaces. And but it's not very differentiated. I'm no way the market leader. I'm not even close. And therefore, there's not much profitability in it and I'm constantly struggling to make sales. Now, in another marketplace, I have had... in the same marketplace in the USA, I've had a related product that is a niche version, if you like. It's a smaller niche of that same market. that has been much less competitive. I have ranked higher on page one relative to the number of reviews I've got, and it's been lower advertising costs, so it's been much more profitable. Now, that was something I mentioned in my previous episode as part of my looking back and analyzing things. Now I'm looking at it through the lens of, is it a star product, right? Which is a slightly different question. It's subtly different, but really powerfully different. So is it a growing sector? Yes, because I've noticed that that particular thing, that particular variation of products, without giving it away, has started to appear more and more in the general search results for the generic word. Let's say that I was looking, for example, for what's related? Silicon spatula, and in that I've had heat resistant silicon spatula. It's not a very good example. Let's say it was frying pan, and I've had frying pan, and within that frying pan market, I've seen non-stick frying pan has become more and more dominant, more and more fashionable, right? Now, that's unrealistic, because I'm sure non-stick frying pans were fashionable in the 60s when they invented Teflon, or around about then, I believe, right? I'm struggling a bit because I'm trying to stay the hell away from my own market and my own product. You get the idea. So I've noticed that trend on Amazon, which is one reason why I ordered a couple of hundred units of X type of product in order to see if they would sell. And lo and behold, they have. So I'm not exactly the number one player in that market yet, but I'm much higher up the pecking order. And I'm beginning to not exactly dominate, but be strong in that particular niche market, right? Now, in the bigger market in the USA, despite this, the fact there's a bigger market, I'm lower down the pecking order. It's more competitive, so I make less profitable sales. Now, in the UK, that same product that I've got in the USA, which is too competitive, is fine, which is something I've mentioned before in other podcasts as well. Now, the reason I mention it again is because through the lens of a star business, I might say, well, actually, it's a relatively small niche, because in the UK, the product sales are going to be about a seventh of the size of the USA. These are not based on the latest figures. It could be a sixth, it could be eighth. But I know that online sales in the UK are the highest level per capita in the world, which is amazing. So online selling in the UK is huge. Now, maybe that trend has begun to slow down because there isn't that much growth left in it. But actually, that has still been a trend that they've observed in the newspaper. So I know that in general, Amazon UK is a place to be. Also, that particular product line, I have proven that it actually works quite well. So in other words, is there a good growth rate? I think so. Now, what I'm going to try and do is get that product variation type, let's say it's the Teflon-coated frying pan rather than just the frying pan, and get that over from the USA and start selling that in the UK as well. Now, that'll be a really niche market, but it could be that because it's very niche and it's still quite small, I can really dominate that market and be the number one player there. Now, if I can keep that lead, keep innovating, keep ahead of the competition, then I will actually potentially have quite a valuable product line that could become the sort of center of the brand. In fact, if it starts to become massively profitable, I might pivot the entire brand. And pivoting a business is something else that people talk about, but not enough in Amazon business context. For example, Twitter. I can't believe that this was true, but Twitter was not invented originally in its current form. They kind of invented, I think, the same kind of system, but they used it for something completely different. Now, I don't know enough of the details, so that's not a very good anecdote, is it? But businesses do change absolutely completely, especially in their early days, their internet startups, because they just find something works and they go with it. That's crazily true for so many things in life. Like, for example, Viagra, I believe, was invented in order to deal with a completely different problem than being used to for sexual performance, but they discovered that as a kind of side effect, it helped male sexual performance, which is why it's now totally famous for that. Right? Forgive me bringing that in, by the way, as an example. It just strikes me because it's so striking. Like, it's the kind of wonder drug for that area, but it was that effect, if you like, was discovered purely by accident, and really the whole company and the whole brand just pivoted over to focusing on that use of the drug, because actually you can use it about other things, right? Aspirin is used by heart patients for thinning the blood, but most people don't use it for that in normal life. They take it as a headache pill, and it's advertised as a headache pill. So your product might, or your business might, be geared to one particular market, and then you may find that your product completely takes off in a completely different direction. You might, for example, sell silicon spatulas and expect them to be used by professional chefs and discover that they're used by amateur chefs, in which case they might have very, very different needs. Professionals need to do things quickly, repetitively. They need tough equipment. They're probably going to spend more money, and they're probably going to spend possibly less frequently than an amateur would. An amateur is going to be more influenced by other amateurs, by cooking programs, by things like that, you know, fashion trends possibly. Again, I'm a bit out of my depth because this is not a market I'm in, but I'm just trying to stay away from my own market. So you get the idea. So the other things that really Richard Koch says about a star business is they need to have a sort of formula to, once they, you know, that they're in a growth market and they are the market leader. Right, a high growth market, consistently growing, say 10% a year on year, and that's a minimum, preferably 30 to 50% in the first few years, then you need four basic things. One is a growth formula. So how are you going to keep things growing? You need an innovation formula, you need a product formula, so you need to have a way of getting the whole machine slick, and you need to have a sort of marketing formula. So basically a way of reliably keeping ahead of the competition. You need to keep innovating, so you don't just stay static, because of course if you sell a fantastically profitable product and you sell lots of it, your competition is going to have a look and go, wow, that product's really worth selling. And they'll either find your exact same supplier. People can do that, by the way. Do not use, this is a little side note but very important, do not use the product photos that you get sent by a supplier from their factory directly on your Amazon listing, because they will have identifiers built into them, which will mean that if somebody knows enough about it and directly find out who your supplier is. So don't help your competition that way, innit? And the other things you need are a way of creating a slick sort of delivery system. So you need to set up a sourcing way of finding suppliers, and a way of getting samples, and a way of verifying suppliers and quality control of the samples and warehousing and all of that stuff. The supply chain, in other words, needs to become a proper chain in the full sense. It needs to become an unbroken, reliable way of getting things done, such that the quality of the products is consistent and high for the consumers and for yourself and for the business, that it is a cost-effective, efficient machine. And there's no point in worrying about that until you've actually found a market, by the way. Once you've got a market and you've got those other things in place, once you've found a market that is growing fast and you can start to dominate, then that is the point at which you try to make sure you get these formulas in place in order to then cement your position, or to create some clear blue water between you and your competition and cement your position as a market leader in your niche market. So guys, that's a very quick and dirty overview of the idea of the star principle and how it can apply in your Amazon business. It's something I'm going to be looking at in as much detail as I possibly can. I want to use it as a sort of general filter for how I view the world. The other book by Richard Koch, which I haven't read yet but is very influential, and Perry Marshall's talked about it, is the 80-20 principle, which is of course the good old Pareto principle, which lots of people pay lip service to. But again, it's a very, very, very powerful way of, how can I put it, it's not just a tool, it's an entire way of seeing the world, really, I would say. And I've recently read Perry Marshall's 80-20 for sales and marketing, which is very powerful. I'll be talking about that on a future episode as well. But the Richard Koch book is not something I've read yet. That's on my to read list, and something I want to find out more about, but that's something else I'll be talking about. But I do think the star principle is something that, although it is going to be something I'll talk about in more detail, a very, very simple basic principle which I think it behooves us all to really bear in mind and really make a fundamental way of looking for things. As Richard Koch puts it out, okay, not most businesses aren't going to come under the heading of a star principle, just like most products aren't going to be a star product. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. There are hundreds, probably thousands of star products potentially you could sell on Amazon out of the hundreds of millions of product lines on there. Okay, it could be as little as 1% of all possible products. That doesn't mean it's none. And doesn't mean you should go into everything expecting every single product to be a star. That is not the aim. But you need to be trying to find your star, and you might as well start off with that idea clearly in your mind, and to define precisely what that is. And it's very simple. It's in a high growth market that is more than 10% growth, maybe 20 to 50% per year. 20 to 50% in the first year is better. And then being the number one in your market. However small a market that is, it's the growth speed that matters, and the being number one in the market, not the size of the market. Very interesting indeed, very educational for us in Amazon. As Amazon sellers, you get a bit obsessed with going after big markets and ignoring the fact that that means high competition and low profit margins. That's certainly something I've learned the hard way myself. This is not just theory. This has absolutely been borne out by my personal experience. So do bear this principle in mind. Go read the book. It's Star Principle by Richard Koch, K-O-C-H. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm not getting any affiliate commission or whatever. I don't know the man. But I just think it's a fantastic book by a man who's absolutely knows his stuff. And he's quite a low-key, nice British guy as well. A really, really likeable character. So, that's it, folks. Just a little in between, so just to keep your brains going over Christmas and New Year, when the fog of alcohol lifts. If you are a person that drinks heavily at Christmas, maybe you don't drink at all, in which case good for you. But the fog of heavy eating is often something that pretty much everyone indulges in. So hopefully when that fog is lifting for your brain, this will help get your brain whirring in the right direction, get the cogs going, get the blow the dust off the cobwebs out and clear the pipes. Whatever other metaphors you want for getting a clear head, guys. So hope that's okay. Sorry about the audio quality. As I said, it's that or nothing, and I would rather keep the podcast going. I want to get an episode a week out there, come what may, and, you know, give that content for you to keep your brain spinning in the right direction and to give you ideas, tactics, strategies, you know, stimulus ideas of how you could be going in your Amazon business in the new year. So if I don't speak to you before, have a great new year, and hope you have a lovely holiday break, and I will be back with you in the new year with some new episodes. So until then, thank you so much for your time and attention. Really means a lot. Not everybody is going to give the time and attention. Certainly you've got to the end of a podcast, which means that you're actually willing to listen to the whole thing or most of it. Really appreciate that. Hope it's been worthwhile. Do give me feedback as ever, guys. Do go to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. If you want to get videos that give you guides on how to deal with basic things like setting up a product listing, setting up a Seller Central account, for example, setting up an email autoresponder and creating an email list of your own, then sign up for the free videos in the Amazon Insiders Club. Just go to www.amazingfba.com/welcome and give your email address and you'll get access to those videos. That's it, folks. Thanks very much. Have a great new year and see you in the next podcast episode.